Welcome to the Realmcast.
Welcome to the Realmcast, Earthrealm's ultimate Mortal Kombat podcast and the official podcast of Mortal Kombat Online. Prepare yourself as we plunge into the depths of the Mortal Kombat multiverse, bringing you well-known and significant members of the Mortal Kombat community. I'm your host, the Mortal Kombat Phantom, and with me as always is my co-host, our Loremaster Yanni. Welcome, Yanni.
Thank you, Phantom. This is the Realmcast, where every warrior has a story to tell, and today's returning combatant is Jeremy Adams, known in the community for being the MK Legends writer. Welcome back, Jeremy.
Hello!
Hey, Jeremy, thank you so much. We've discussed your career in previous Legends movies in the past episodes, but today we'd like to focus on, you know, Mortal Kombat 1's recent release and the upcoming Mortal Kombat Legends cage match. So That's kind of the point of today's episode. So First off, let's talk a little bit about Mortal Kombat 1 without going into spoilers. We can get into that later because we want to give everybody a chance to not get spoiled.
Actually, listen. Yeah.
So have you played Mortal Kombat 1 yet, or have you seen the story mode at all?
No, I mean, the funny thing is, prior to Blind, I knew it was great because it dovetailed into the multiverse aspect that we had talked to Ed and Dominic, and that was like perfect for what they were planning. So, you know, I had done Snowblind years ago, so it was like I kind of knew that was happening and I knew that was going forward. So I was super psyched about that. And then Dominic had actually just sent me some of the clips of them, you know, like Johnny Cage going like, I've got a perfect name for the movie with you and like Scorpion and Bion. And he's like, you know, Scorpion's Revenge. I was like, oh, cool. You're name checking the movie. That's super rad.
There's so much more like that too. I think we'll go into that in a bit.
So we will be making sure to not have any Mortal Kombat 1 spoilers this time, just for you, Jeremy.
Oh, really? Good. No. Listen, if you want to spoil it, that's fine. I've got kids and a life that I can't, like, I'm like, oh gosh, someday I'll pull away. By the time I get to Mortal Kombat 1, they'll be on like Mortal Kombat 50, and I'll be like, oh.
So I guess I'm taking it as you didn't have any actual contributions with what they did with Mortal Kombat 1 at all, or?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
With that in mind, let's get into Cage Match then. How did the previous Legends movies prepare you or change your approach for Cage Match?
Well, I think we talked about this last time. When we did 1 and 2, it definitely was getting our feet wet for what the obligations were in terms of what NetherRealm wanted, what Warner Brothers Animation wanted, and it shifted. I mean, there was a, obviously for Mortal Kombat, Scorpion's Revenge, there was a shift. Like originally, I think I had pitched it that it was all going to be from the point of view of Scorpion, but we had kind of moved that around according to some of the notes and what they wanted to have happen and kind of the retelling of the first tournament there. And then the second one, I mentioned this before, we cut out about 40 minutes of that one. And that one is just like, it's jam-packed full of lore and all this stuff because I mean, Rick and I were very much like, man, Mortal Kombat is so much more than just one, you know, a tournament. We were like trying to shove a ton of stuff in there. And I think for what we did, it was great. You know, for me, it was like, you know, there's so much more there that we didn't get to explore. So when they came to us about doing more, they said, hey, these are wildly successful. We need some more, but we want them to be radically different. Mm-hmm. And I was like, right. Awesome. Here's 6 ideas, you know, and Snowblind was one of them. I had a bunch of other ideas, and Cage Match was one of them. And I remember the executive, I might've told you this, the executive was like, I don't want to do that one. And I was like, that was the one I wanted to do. So I was like, let's just keep it on the list. I'm sure they won't do anything. You know, they won't pick it. And Ed and Dominic were like, we want to do this one. And I could see the executive. You know, and I was like, yeah, I was like super pumped. But I just wanted to do this kind of like Shane Black Mortal Kombat movie. And when I finally saw the completed project, I was like, I cannot believe they let us do this. I mean, I'm so flabbergasted by it because it's utterly ridiculous and I love it. It's one of those projects that I've done a few of these now where it's like, it doesn't matter if everybody hates it. I adore it. There's so many like Mortal Kombat Easter eggs in it. It is this weird line between funny and violent and just really peculiar, just really out there, you know? But I think with Snowblind and this one, we got to do like two tonal different things. Snowblind, mm-hmm. we did Rick Morales. That was, he was really like hands-on in that. He directed that one too. And Rick and I have done like, I don't know, 10 or 11 movies at this point together. So we have a really good friendship and a really good collaboration. And so when we started doing Johnny Cage, it's insane. And it was just like, I started seeing designs and they were sending me stuff and songs and like these 80s vibes. And I'm like, this is nuts. And then when we got Jennifer Grey to come into the movie and Gilbert Godfrey, I think it might be Gilbert Godfrey's last performance. And uh-huh. And then Joel McHale back again. And Joel is yeah. such an exacting collaborator that, you know, I'll have a line and he'll be like, no, that's not good enough, man. Like, you can do better. You know, it's like, oh, fine. I'll do better, you know. And so that was incredible. It was an incredible thing. I don't know if you saw some of the footage, if anybody filmed the footage from, where was it at? It might have been a Comic-Con when they showed the trailer.
Yeah.
And he had a little segment right before it where he was talking about Johnny Cage. And it was so funny where he's just like, yeah, it's the guy. It's Joel McHale, the voice of Johnny Cage. It was just like the way he does it is so funny. And it's like, I can't get that voice out of my head, you know?
I'm sad I missed that. I didn't get a chance to see that. I think
they made a mistake not casting Joel McHale as Johnny Cage in the movies. He's still ripped, oh, yeah. even if he's a little older.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you mean the live action ones?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, after our interview with you, you know, I really started reconsidering. And I was like, you know, I could see Joel McHale doing that. Like, I love him like the community and everything too. So, like, yeah. He knows how to put on a good performance, a good show. Like,
well, even he's deceptively ripped. That's the thing that you don't. Yeah. Know. Like, oh, I don't think funny people are supposed to look like that.
<laughs> You know. With you were mentioning the inclusion of Jennifer Grey and Gilbert Godfrey. Did you actually write the script to have Jennifer Grey in there?
We wanted an 80s icon originally, like an 80s icon. And we were like, had our feelers out to a couple of people. And when she mm-hmm. jumped at it, we were freaking out. And it was just like, oh my gosh, Ferris Bueller's sister's going to be in this movie, you know?
Yeah.
Like Red Dawn, Dirty Dancing. And that was kind of like overwhelming a little bit. I remember Rick and I just like, this is really surreal, you know? That's and then so with cool. Gilbert Godfrey, what was cool about it is I wrote this character that he's playing based on somebody I've actually met. Like, so much of it is like so much of my life and Hollywood, and I was able to just kind of weave it all together into this thing. And it's funny, there's a moment where Rick in the behind the scenes is like, yeah, I was about halfway through this when I realized this is Jeremy's origin story. And I just started laughing because the Johnny Cage, Jeremy Adams story is very similar. So I was like, great, yeah. This puts together. I mean, even to the fact that like Cage's original name was Carlton, like his last name mm-hmm. is Carlton. I think that's my middle name. So I was like, hey, this all fits together, you know?
Jeremy Cage Adams.
Yeah, seriously. That's all it is now. You've even got the first initial.
I know. Yeah, JC. I know.
So what can you tell us actually regarding the plot for this movie?
I'm trying to think what was on the back of the DVD. you know, it is this kind of quaint plot of Johnny Cage is, you know, on the cusp of superstardom. And mm-hmm. in order, you know, I will tell you that his co-star, probably his star, he's probably the co-star, is missing. And it's like, they got to find her or this movie is not going to go. And that mm-hmm. ends up sending him down this entire rabbit hole of monsters and demons and cults and insanity. And it's really, I mean, for the people that are really into Mortal Kombat, there's some twists and turns that only they'll get, which is hilarious.
All right. You know?
So people that are just going to watch it, I think are just going to really enjoy. I hope they're going to enjoy it. And it's just funny and silly and weird. And then there are things that you're going to go, oh my gosh, like that character, like, you know, and I've done that with the last movies, just really tried to dig into some of the character, you know, it's a Mortal Kombat movie, so you got to kill people. And also like dig into some of the mythology and find corners of the mythology that maybe haven't been looked at as much. So that's kind of where I'm at here.
With Cage and Match, you know, what we've seen so far from the trailers and such, it seems like you drew a lot of inspiration possibly from Mortal Kombat X. Is that the case? Or was this like, how much of a collaboration effort was it between yourself and the writers from NetherRealm Studios to kind of put this together?
Yeah, I mean, I believe it's X. You'll know more than I, but
The whole NetherRealm story, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, so some of the characters, I mean, the fact is that usually everything I do is I'm looking at threads and things that would like vibe with the ideas that I have going through. And sometimes I'll have like this, you know, crazy idea of the story, and I will get on the horn with Dominic and we'll talk about like, hey, you know, like, can I use this character? And he might say, no, use this one instead, or this one is more appropriate, which is great because we've been able to fit in some characters that maybe don't have the light shine on them as much. I mean, that was the same thing in Snowblind. You'll see all the background characters and the weird little characters that show up in the apocalyptic setting. You're just like, oh, will we?
Just the fact that No Face was there. I still remember having this discussion with you. That was crazy.
Yeah. And it's not just him. It's like other characters that you're just like, I mean, who knows?
Kira, Cobra, Dairu.
Yeah. Like, who knows if you'll ever get a chance to, I mean, shoot, you may never see Kenshi again. You know what I mean? Like, this type of things where you're just like, these are really side corners where most people want to just concentrate on the main few. So, like I said, this is bananas. And and putting some of those characters in was really fun. And trying to make it sync up with some of the mythology that's already existed is really fun. But we also have a little more leeway just because, sort of like Snowblind, we have a little bit of leeway in terms of the multiverse of Mortal Kombat. And I think purposely when we've had Kronika's Hourglass and stuff, and we were just thinking like, oh, you know, this entire movie is a cutscene of Kano winning, you know. So it's like, oh, but when they started telling us their plans about different timelines and stuff, we're like, oh, this is cool. From an animation standpoint, this is a killer way to build out your animation franchise if you wanted to. I mean, if they have plans for other movies, it's not with me, sadly, but I don't think they do, sadly, still, you know. So this is probably the last one for a while.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I think we'll come back to that.
I mean, let's just put it this way. It's the last one for a while, but if it sells 1 billion copies, they're going to be like, it's the last one until right now, because you got to get started.
You know? And that's how the other ones seem to have been too. Like every time we talked to you.
That's what the first two were. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first two, it was like, we thought that was it.
Yeah.
So the characters who might not have seen been in the deserved spotlight over the years. The casting here, in terms of just purely Mortal Kombat characters, other than Johnny, we're seeing Kia, Shinnok, Ashra, Jataka, and Raiden, and then even Master Boyd. So, firstly, I need to address Kia and Jataka, because to me, this is an amazing choice of characters to bring in, because I love the Brotherhood of Shadow storyline and everything. But then at the same time, I feel like I've been slapped in the face by you, because you've got Kian Jataka, but no Serena as thus far. So I'm hoping this is another situation where you surprise us.
Yanni is such a Serena fan that like, he started crying when she was included in the new game.
I was like, oh my God.
You just have to watch the movie, man. It's one of those things when you're promoting a movie, it's like you don't want to tell all everything, right?
Of course.
Yep. And whether you're disappointed or not. there are going to be some twists and turns that I think are going to be really cool. There's one that's just so inside baseball that you only find out at like the credits. Which is kind of silly and fun. We took some liberties, but we had a great time doing it. And with the Brotherhood of Shadows, I just think of, there's a comment that Joel McHale makes. It's so funny. But you know,
Gotta wait for that. Yeah. Well, I mean, Scorpion's Revenge had a Natara cameo. Snowblind featured, as we just mentioned, a few longtime unseen 3D era characters. Can we expect further cameos in a similar vein?
Not necessarily. I mean, I will tell you, we had to cut a couple things. Again, these are movies that are like, you only have a certain amount of assets. I can't tell you anymore. It's such a peculiar thing. And what's so great about it, I mean, from my point of view too, I'll write all these characters, but then we'll hand it off to the storyboard guys. And whether it's Ethan or Rick or the storyboard guys, they'll add characters in the background. And sometimes I'll have no idea. I'll have no idea until I see the finished product. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's, you know, look at these characters from other Mortal Kombat that don't even have speaking parts, you know? So be on the lookout, because you guys will probably have no more than I. Like, I, you know, I know what I wrote, and outside of that, I'm oblivious to things. So it's, there's a certain amount of like, it'll be interesting to see people parse it afterward.
One thing we noticed is that a lot of the voice actors who actually worked on the Mortal Kombat games have been cast for this movie. Was that a conscious decision?
Yeah, I believe Rick and Ethan wanted to make that link to the video games. Despite, like, you know, people's apprehension about like Battle of the Realms or whatever, like, we've always tried to put our foot forward in terms of like collaborating with NetherRealm in a way that is respectful. And you could kind of see that up front, because Ed has been such a huge promoter of the stories and the movies for us. Like, he's been such a champion for us, and so is Dominic. And I think that just comes from the fact that, like, we don't know everything, because it's a huge mythology, and it's like we're relying on them, and we're also like wanting to kind of exploit it in a way that like they'll be excited about. You know, in a way, it's like, I want to tell a story, but I also want Ed Boon and Dominic to be like, this is awesome. And it's like, that's a huge bar for me, you know, because when you have something that's as big as Mortal Kombat, there's always going to be a percentage that just hates you, you know, no matter what you do, you know. And I wasn't particularly ready for it, because I had gotten I get some of that from Scooby-Doo. I get some of that from Supernatural, whatever, comic books. But Mortal Kombat is a different breed of people. And and there are some people are like, oh, I like it. And some people are like, never write again. And that's like, I can only make the people in my sphere happy, you know? And and they seem to be happy. But honestly, we're just trying to do the best we can with the Mortal Kombat that we're presented with, you know? And we come up with these crazy storylines and just like hope that they'll gravitate toward it.
Even with the Battle of the Realms, I mean, we talked about this on some of our past episodes with you, for the apprehension that fans have towards, you know, that third act of it, fans were still super excited to see things like, you know, Shinnok's amulet, the Kamidogu, the one being, like, stuff like that. It's still in there sprinkled about. And like, I remember ourselves watching it, we were like, oh, how did Jeremy know to put that in there? Like, how did he know about the realms?
Like everything.
Yeah.
You know, that, by the way, that's just like something I love to do. I mean, if you read my comic books that happened in The Flash and Green Lantern, like, I dig deep and it is super fun for me to do callbacks that aren't so obtrusive that somebody that's watching it for the first time is like, what the heck is this? You know, like it's that it's interesting for people that continually read or continually watch things. I think it's a joy, you know?
So I'm not a huge Flash fan, but I'm a huge Green Lantern fan. So of course I've been picking up every issue that you've been writing so far. And, you know, with the Flash itself, even looking through the stories and stuff, I could tell that you had done your research. And that's something that we love about some of the writers that we bring on here. The ones who are truly dedicated, go back and reread the lore and learn about the history. With Green Lantern itself, you know, you're doing like a Hal Jordan centric story, but you're still sprinkling in all these little things, like having Sinestro on the storyline doing who knows what still, stuff like that. And I'm curious, did your experience and, like, you know, since we first talked to you with Scorpion's Revenge, did your experience with working for DC Comics impact how you've written this story at all? Has it kind of changed the way that you're looking at it? Or is it, you still feel like you're the same writer back then?
I'm not the same writer in terms of like just craft. I think I'm just getting better. I mean, I hope I'm getting better. At least I'm enjoying myself. At least I can like translate it better from my brain onto the page. There's still lots to learn. And screenwriting and comic book writing are different forms. So there's different format in terms of how you write certain things. You have 22 pages or 20 pages to tell a story, or, you know, part of a story, versus 89, 90, or in the case of Battle of the Realms, 120. you know, you have, you, there's a certain amount of pacing, I think, that I'm trying to be cognizant of. Like even with Green Lantern, it's like, I'm never going to spend a year, like more than a year, explaining the story. You know, they're not going to, I tease mysteries, but I want to solve those mysteries, because once a month for $5, somebody's investing in it. So I want them to enjoy it. With Mortal Kombat, you know, it's a little faster pacing. I think I write a little faster for screenwriting, so things move along really quick. I mean, like Cage Match is it'll blow by in a way. That's pretty funny. And it's pretty funny. There are things I mean, there are just things you learn over time. Like in Mortal Kombat or Cage Match, it takes place all over Los Angeles. And I found out you couldn't put things like the Hollywood sign, and you couldn't put things like Man's Chinese Theater or whatever. You had to come up with your own version of that, because otherwise you have to pay for it. So it ended up becoming this really incredibly wonderfully fun thing to do our very, and it pushed us to kind of play with a few things here and there. So it feels like LA, but not exactly.
Instead of Man's Chinese Theater, you put in Woman's Japanese Theater.
I mean, it's like that, totally. And when you see it, you're going to be like, ah, but it becomes something that we are very like winking at, because, and you can only do that because it's Johnny Cage, you know, because it's this movie about making movies with the guy that makes movies, you know, it just seemed to fit together nicely that we got, I mean, we had this really happy accident where I said somebody's name, and I didn't say the full name, but I mentioned like this director named blah, blah, blah. And legal was like, you can't say that. And we're like, why? Like, there's many people with that first name. And they're like, no, well, you know, you can't do that. So we ended up making this really hilarious moment where, I don't want to spoil, but Johnny gets censored, and it's hysterical. I mean, it's really, really funny.
I love it. It's almost like South Park style humor, singled, like, you know, how they kind of tongue in cheek types things all over the place. I'm excited for that.
And it's a very over the top sort of a feel so far, just based on what we've seen in the trailer. And that really fits with what we would expect of a Johnny Cage centric movie.
Oh, yeah. Right.
It is what you think is over the top. And then it's like, it's over the top. Like, it's even further. and it's funny because, like, I wrote something again. They always surprise me, the storyboard guys and Rick and Ethan and stuff. They always surprise me because I had like put something in and I thought it was just like a regular fight scene. But of course, they're like, no, this is a Mortal Kombat thing. So it's like, you know, whereas I put like, oh, he does this thing. And next thing I know, this arm is just blown off. And I'm like, you know, like, I super appreciate that they can fill in the gaps when I when I don't know what's going on.
I'm curious, does that inability to use specific people, does that play into Johnny's assistant at all? Because a lot of people have been comparing him to Steve Urkel.
And yeah.
Was that intentional or?
No. I mean, I didn't design him. I for a long time, I was an assistant in Hollywood, and that was one of my first jobs. And it's such a surreal job, at least when I was coming up, because the things they ask you to do is so outside the norm of normal humanity. And so to have an assistant that gets embroiled in this too, but also can help Johnny, you know, give some explanation. And there's some fun stuff around the assistant that will come to light that I think people are like, what? You know, so it'll be interesting.
How would you describe your take on bringing these specific characters to life? I mean, Johnny, he seems similar to the one that we all know and love already, but is there a new sort of feel given to his character for this story specifically?
Yes. It's Johnny is now almost at the height of his powers. So it's not the Johnny that's like a little, like, you know, at the beginning of Mortal Kombat, Scorpion's Revenge, he's kind of like, oh, okay, it's going to be this job on an island, I guess, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
This is like a Johnny that's like, yeah, I'm all that in a bag, you know, like his ego is in full bloom. I mean, probably more so than it was in one, which you think, can it be? And I'm like, yes, it can. Like he is a level of egotism. And but it's such a fun character to write. And it's, you know, I obviously one of my favorite movies of all time is Big Trouble in Little China. And I liken this to like, yeah, it's Bloodsport meets Big Trouble in Little China blended up together in like a Shane Black, you know, type thing. Because he's so arrogant. And it provides so much comedy, but also just like you love the guy because he's just like... Like, I'm sure I can do this. I'm Johnny Cage, you know? And they're like, I don't think that's what that's supposed to be, you know? So it's really, like I said, and Joel just plays it to a T. I'm not saying he's, you know, too close to that or anything. No, just kidding. he's super humble. But boy, he can play an arrogant guy like nobody's business.
Well, in terms of the choices of characters then, obviously, Johnny Cage focus story. But then how do you come to deciding upon using Ashra for a Johnny Cage story? How does that sort of fit together?
I think when, just like in Snowblind, when we start talking about the Black Dragon and stuff like that, you start to look at their list of people that operate around them. So when it's like the Brotherhood, it's like, oh, okay, what characters kind of operate within the sphere of this organization? And that can kind of help inform the story at large. And there are some weird pieces of that mythology that when I was digging into it, I was just like, oh, this is really weird. You know, there are just little segments of this mythology that I think, oh, well, I think we can, you know, and you're also going like, what did they show in the games and what did they hint at? And what can I kind of bend to my will? You know, or can I say, well, it says this, but it never showed, you know?
Yeah. You know, the way that this new movie looks, it has a very similar art style to Patrick Nagel or Moonbeam City. And I'm curious, you know, is that something that also kind of reflects through the story, or is it just that the art department heard 80s aesthetic and just kind of threw that stylized fashion throughout the entire run of this movie?
No, it is very much intentional in terms of like we knew it was going to take place in this kind of time frame. And so we wanted to reflect that, but I didn't realize they were going to go that far. You know,
I mean, it's so cool.
It's like I write things and Rick and I talked about it extensively and like the vibe, like we want to make this 80s action, you know, whatever. And then there's this moment where, you know, Ashra takes off her hat and it's like, it's absolutely Nagel. And I was like, oh, okay. We just went full on, you know, and this is the first time in my career at Warner Brothers that they let us use like actual music from the time. And I remember Rick called me and he's like, holy crap. They just gave me like access to all these songs that Warner Brothers owns from like the 80s. And I'm like, shut up. Yes. You know? So, yeah. So it is both nothing you've ever heard and sounds exactly like everything you've heard. So it's really rad. And we just were laughing and I was just howling because he kept sending me clips. He would torture me with it, honestly, because you write something, you send it away. These guys start doing their thing. And Rick just got really engrossed with it. And Ethan, and suddenly they would send me little clips and stuff. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? You got to let me see the whole thing. And they're like, not yet, you know? And then when I finally saw it, I was just like, oh my gosh, I was sitting there laughing and my wife kept looking at me and she goes, this is like looking inside your brain. I'm like, I know, you know? And I'm just like, it's such a weird blend of Mortal Kombat and, like I said, my origin story. Like the fact that Johnny in this, you know, his kind of origin and, you know, it does blend with mine, like getting very abusively beat up in junior high until I started learning martial arts. And there's a very, it's so fun to take things from your own life and then infuse it into ultra violence. <laughs> You know? And so it's really cool that we get to see some of that, you know, and Johnny's journey. It's hilarious.
Well, you brought up Kronika's Hourglass earlier, and obviously, you know, this ties into the whole multiverse sort of take on Mortal Kombat now. Will this story be its own isolated story, or will it have any relation or continuation from Snowblind or even previous Legends movies?
I will say it's not a continuation of Snowblind. Mm-hmm. Does it link up with other ones? Maybe. All I could say is that I know that it wasn't supposed to be. It wasn't supposed to be, but I know that Rick, in Rick's mind especially, and he'll tell you this, is that he wants this all to be in kind of a continuous universe, like an animated Legends universe to a degree. So that's about as vague as I can get there.
So you mentioned earlier that as of right now, Cage Match is the currently the last one, and we could possibly see more if the sales do really well on this one. So does this have basically its own conclusion? Is it a self-contained story, or is it kind of its own chapter, which kind of opens up to more in the future?
Yes, it does. It does end-ish.
Okay.
So the ending of this movie will answer some of your previous questions.
Gotcha.
All right.
And it's done in such a cool way that I remember just being like, oh, this is so good. Like I was just, like I said, I mean, and also I notoriously have bad taste. So maybe that's sadly, you know, maybe I'm like, this was stupid, you know? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, I did a Batman movie, Batman Soul of the Dragon, and it all took place in the 70s. And I remember people being so mad at the ending. And I'm like, but that's how 70s movies ended. like we were being true to form. You know, so it was like, okay, well, I'm sorry you didn't like it. I love it. that's how I feel about this one. This one, it's like this, Soul of Dragon, Super Sons. Those are like right up there in my like, oh yeah, at least I somehow got away with these, you know.
So this story, does it have a similar runtime as previous movies?
About an hour 20?
They pretty much are forced to clock around those, yeah.
Okay. Do you think we're going to see possibly any extended cuts, like longer versions, or even with Battle of the Realms or anything like that? Do you think we'll ever see that deleted footage?
Nope. Oh,
that's too bad.
That is such and I would like to address that for any listeners at this point who haven't heard past episodes, which you definitely should check out with Jeremy. But it has been confirmed that there was a lot more to them, which was cut out. And I know that one of the biggest criticisms of Battle of the Realms was that it felt a bit rushed towards the end. And there's a reason for that.
Right.
So
yeah, there was a whole clone subplot in Battle of the Realms, and there were a couple things we had to cut out of this that maybe someday down the line I'll be able to talk about. But I mean by the way, we learned our lesson. I think you can drastically I think from Battle of the Realms to Snowblind, you can go, oh, okay. You know, we kind of figured out the pacing and like, oh, this is what that story is, you know? So
yeah,
we started making them a little more simple, or simpler, I should say, in terms of like, let's not have five games mythology crammed into one.
Into one. So with Mortal Kombat 1's recent release, I'm not going to go into spoilers because I don't want to spoil it for yourself or anybody who's listening who hasn't got to play through the game completely. But, you know, there's a few references, as you've kind of mentioned, to some of the stuff that you've done, like the Scorpion's Revenge line.
Yeah.
There's another line too where, you know, there's
which is actually in the story itself, I think, or is it a character dialogue?
Oh, the Scorpion's Revenge one, you mean?
The That's Scorpion's Revenge one was a character dialogue.
Yeah.
But I think this one that you're about to mention.
Yeah, so this one's in the story, and there's a brief mention of, you know, a possibility of a universe where Kano takes over and has the Hourglass or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, how does it feel to have impacted Mortal Kombat to the point where you have fans out there petitioning for King Kano to make it into the new game?
Well, can I tell you that Rick in Scorpion's Revenge, Rick like tried to get them to do a skin, like you could pay for it, unlock of Scorpion, like an animated, like the animated designs. As we were like, man, what if the DVD came with a skin that you could scan, you know, that you could
just... Everybody wants Snowblind Scorpion.
It would everybody. Oh my gosh, that was so cool. Can I tell you, when I originally wrote that, it was so funny. I wrote this scene in Snowblind where he lights his farm on fire, right? Like he's going to walk away from being a farmer, and he's summoning Scorpion because they've kind of made this deal. And originally I was like, yeah, he lights it on fire and it turns into this like Mortal Kombat symbol. And Rick was like, no. And I was like, what? Man, I saw it in The Crow and then I saw it in like 50 movies afterwards. Yeah. I was like, yeah, you're right. You know, but yeah, the Scorpion design was so badass in that. And I would love to see some of these designs. As far as what it feels like is I did my job in terms of I'm excited that those contributions live on in some way, but it also just tells me that they liked working with me. And I can't tell you how important that is, not just for my career and my job and my lack of self-esteem. Like it's like super, super important to know that we were all collaborating. You know, NetherRealm and us were collaborating. We were all on the same page. And that's a rare thing. So many times ego gets into these things and can really muck up the works. I mean, the fact that I've been able to do four of these, they could have just got a new person after one. They could have got a new person after two, three. You know what I mean? And I feel like they let me really kind of push Cage Match because as a kind of a thank you in a weird way, I kind of feel that way. Cause I'm like, this is really just like my soul. Like this is, I love this, you know? And it's so just like, well, this is weird.
Well, with all the writing that you've been able to do, as you said, like you've been a consistent writer over time, which we're very happy for. And I know many Mortal Kombat fans are happy about, but do you feel like you've made any characters your own now, even just through Cage Match itself?
I don't know if it's my own. I mean, I always get checked a little bit. I definitely have my version of them in my head. And and then when you give somebody, like if you give Joe McHale the voice, now I just hear his voice for Johnny Cage. Like, I think the live action movie is going to be really hard for me to watch a little bit because I'm going to just be like, Joel could have done, you know what I mean? Like, and the same thing with like Scorpion in a way. When I had read about his origin story, that's one thing, but when I was able to write it out in a way that became dramatic and sad and seeing the kid and seeing the wife dead and the fact that this guy's rage can like propel him out of hell in a way, like I was like, oh, this is how I feel like this character is. Like now this is what that character is to me. Was interesting. So that's like my take, but you know, I don't own the characters. They're other people's. It's just the same thing that everybody that writes it has a little bit of a different voice. And my job is to, you know, not go too far afield that it doesn't sound like the character that everybody loves. And but that's the same thing in comics too. It's like these characters have been around a lot longer than I have. And I just wanted to, you know, honor it, but also give it enough of a twist that you're not watching something. You're like, I've seen this. Like, that'd be the worst thing if you're bored. Like, I know what this is. It's like, you got to have enough little twists. Like the hard thing with animation, film and all that stuff too, especially because we're in such a pirating age and people pirate the crud out of these things, sadly, is like in Snowblind. Like we were like, that turn to Kronika's hourglass is such a huge turn. And we reserve it for so long that we're like, man, imagine if you're a fan of this stuff and you're watching this movie our hope was people would be like, this is stupid. This is not how it's done. And then when the Chronicles are there, they go, holy crap. You know, like we wanted to like oh no, that's fun. Huh? You know, like I wanted that to be the thing, you know? So it's like, you got us, Jeremy. You got us. Like we were ready to pick up. But then you made it make work within the mythology. It's like, yes, that's my job.
I think we said exactly that to you when we had you on post-release. You
know, when that trailer came out, there were so many fans who were like, what is this? Yeah. And then like when you watch the story, they're like, oh, all right.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You did mention all this in relation to, for example, Johnny and Scorpion, but how about in relation to lesser known characters? Because we have not seen up until very, very recently, Ashura Kiya Jataka for like 17 years or something, really.
Yeah.
So how did you go about writing those characters? Like, what was the sort of inspiration, and where did the actual knowledge come from with regards to those characters?
All the characters have been written by other NetherRealm writers for a long time. So having that as a basis, Ashura in particular, I think is kind of compelling, you know, mm-hmm. this character that's kind of looking for redemption in a certain way. And then you mix it within the contextually in the plot and see what you know, and it's also this oil and vinegar thing. You're like, okay, I'm going to put her next to Johnny. Like, that's weird. And that provides for a lot of just like, oh, okay, that works. You know, like there's a lot of hilarity that comes from that. The lesser known ones is just fleshing out what's already there, because a lot of times you don't have the space to have these. I mean, and nor do you want the space in a video game necessarily, unless mm-hmm. you're just like a total cutscene whore that you're like, yeah, more cutscenes. It's like you want enough to get you to the fight, right? Like to be invested in the fight, but a lot of people are going a like, you know, they're trying to get away, and so you just want enough that people go, oh, this isn't just a cardboard cutout. This is kind of an interesting character with an interesting plot. And then what's great is you get these voice actresses like Kelly Hu and all these people that like just imbue them with a lot of character and emotion mm-hmm. that even my words, you know, can't even come up with. And that's a cool thing. It's like, I do this even in comic books. It's like the artist does such a great job of visually storytelling. And my job at that point is not to be precious with my words and like cut back, you know, mm-hmm. or yep. change to the voice that I'm writing for. And I mean, that's definitely with Joel McHale, obviously. After the first one, I was like, oh crud, I know what this is now. I can really beef this up and write toward hopefully his strengths. I mean, that's the job anyways. That's what I hope to do.
You know, in the past, we discussed with you how you kind of started your career with the Mortal Kombat franchise. Basically, people were like, oh, that guy loves, you know, kung fu stuff. That guy loves martial arts. And they kind of just said, okay, let him have a try at it.
Yeah.
So how would you say being involved with Mortal Kombat has or is continuing to affect your career at this point now?
You know, not so much me. I mean, it's gotten me a little more, it's funny. Everybody knows Mortal Kombat. So it's so there's a little bit more of like, oh, you did those? Great. You know, they've seen that. It's weird though, because my writing for movies and television is not really, nobody really knows. I mean, they don't really care about writers for those things. It's not really something on the radar. Comic books, totally different scenario. I started writing comic books. People are pointing me out in the street like, hey, and I'm like, what? That's weird. You know? Even though there's millions more people that have seen the animation and stuff. You know, I think the only thing that I can do in terms of being a writer is like, I'm trying to do a variety of things. I've been blessed to be able to do a variety of things. And really just, I can go from a little Lego kids thing to somebody getting his head ripped off. You know, it's like, oh, this guy is versatile. And so it does help in that aspect. It also, because I've touched animation or touched video games in some form, I get a lot of like, hey, would you want to develop this video game thing? Or would you want to do this or do that? And I'm like, do people die? Cause that would be cool. No, like, is there martial arts in it? Like, I, you know, it's weird. It's like, you do video games. You want to do Q-Bert? It's like, no, it's not the same, you know? so it's like the fact that I love martial arts and stuff too, I think lends itself to the fact that I have fun, but I'm the Mikey likes it of every media. I will do your project if you pay me. It's just very rare to be able to get projects that are something that you can like sink your teeth in and have fun with that you love, you know? And so I've been really fortunate in that regard.
We have Cage Match releasing on 17th of October, as far as I remember. I'm going to be a bit, what's the word here? Pushy and okay. see if it's possible for you to share any potential moments that you liked from Cage Match with us that you're able to tease us with.
There is a Star Tours bus scene that I think is hilarious.
It's the last thing you expect from a Mortal Kombat movie.
I know. What can I say, man? Oh, man. There's so many just completely crazy moments. There is a battle at the end that's really funny, too. I mean, it's really good, but it's really funny. And then it's just trying to weave in a little bit of, like, Johnny's mythology as well. And I was trying to, like, really pinpoint some of the stuff, like the shadow kick and some of the powers and stuff. It's like, wait a second, this video game said this about Johnny's heritage and blah, blah, blah. And, like, trying to figure out what that is and implement that. But anyways, you'll see.
All right. Cool. Thank you for those little teasers.
It's like so, like, I'm just like, man, I can't believe they let us do it.
So, you know, earlier you mentioned that whenever you first kind of came to Warner Brothers or spoke to Warner Brothers about starting up the series, you gave them several different scripts. Have you kind of gone through all those ideas at this point, or do you still have a few more?
Yeah. I mean, these things, we had six different ideas, and like, let's see, the other four, one was like really out there. Some of them were very much like, there was like a prequel one, like a really cool, like back in the past one I thought was cool, and one in the future. Like there were some things that are just ripping off of some of the storylines that already exist that I thought was really cool. Some of that also comes from the fact that like I saw some of the cool art from the video games that would show and cut scenes of things. I'm like, oh, that would totally like spur on something. Because the Kano one, that was, I mean, that thing kind of spurred. There was a cut scene with Kano winning, and it was like, ooh, this is kind of cool, mm-hmm. you know? And that just kind of launched an entire story, you know?
Are you able to tell us any of some of these other ideas or?
Oh, no. I mean, maybe years from now when they say, we're never, ever going to do anymore, but... I've been at this long enough to be like, hey, do you have an idea? And I'm like, here's a bunch, you know? And also you just have to keep that stuff weirdly close to the chest, not just for yourself so that you can have something ready, but also legally, weirdly, like, you know, people sue people all the time. Like, I told them this idea. And it's like, you know, no, you didn't. Or everybody had the idea. I can't tell you how many times writers that I know, including me, have gone to a movie theater and the preview screen comes up and then you see a movie for something that you're just like, oh my gosh, I've written that script. Like, that's the same idea. You know, it's just ideas float around in the ether. And so I don't want to give it any more breath.
Fair enough. I mean, how about in terms of, I mean, assuming that, you know, you get to continue making Mortal Kombat Legends projects, which we are very much hoping for.
That would be great.
Would we be able to...
No plan.
Would we be able to expect any... No plan, yes. But if it does happen, would we be able to expect any focus on various other characters and realms as well, in addition to what we've seen so far?
I mean, there's what I want to do, and there's what the higher-ups want to do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I would love to focus on... I think there's so many characters that are compelling. I said before, I love the idea of, like, the fall of Adenia, I think is a cool, like, just in terms of like, oh, that's interesting. There's some, you could do a, like, if I ran Max, they call it now, right? HBO Max. I was like, you could have like just 1,000 stories going. You could have your own Game of Thrones, Adenia, you know, story happening. You could have, you know, the first Mortal Kombat fight. You could have the fall of Shang Tsung. Like, you could have all these cool things, which to me would be rad, you know?
Yeah.
But evidently they don't like money. So, you know, I don't know.
So, you know, ever since we first talked to you, you've been such a proponent of wanting Johnny Cage to kind of have his own story. Like, you know, it's kind of throughout our conversations, you could just tell you wanted Johnny to do something. Do you have now that you have Johnny Cage, is there another character that you would love to see be brought to life in the same way?
I see how you're trying to backdoor me into talking about exactly what I told you.
We warned you.
You know, there's always a bunch of characters. I said even last time I would love to do something about Sonya Blade because I thought that I even thought about that with the first movie. I think, gosh darn, like I would have loved to seen the live action movie. I remember thinking like, because they didn't, she wasn't part of the people that could fight for Earthrealm in the movie, I think, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, gosh, that little tidbit is so interesting to me, because here's this female in the special forces and, like, has to come up through a lot of adversity and still isn't special enough to do this thing. Like, there's a very Rocky element to that that I was like, oh, that would be neat. That's a neat story I would love to see told about her. There's some other, like, I mean, I like the Great Kung Lao. Like, I would love to tell that story.
That would
just be a cool movie unto itself, or story unto itself. So there's some of those characters that I like, and I would love to see more of.
Could we see an animated series in addition to the Legends movies at some point ever?
I mean, I'm sure you could. There's absolutely no indication that if they were doing that, which I have no idea, I know nothing about it. You know, I'm sure they
would
could.
Would you like to be involved in something like that? Would you prefer movies? Yeah,
of course. I'm like, you got the money, honey. I got the time. Like, all day. That would be incredible. I just think that Mortal Kombat's one of those things that, like I said, evidently people don't like money. Like, it's just evergreen, right, at this point, I feel like. Even the hype around Mortal Kombat 1 was so massive. And I don't know if you saw that they put that, like, the trailer or, like, the teaser for it on that dome thing in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
It's like, that's, dude, you know, and it was everywhere. Dave Bautista commercials, you know, you're like, whoa, Van Damme. Like, I was like, what? No, why not? Losing my mind.
So,
all right, I'm going to cut you guys off because I know what's going to happen. You're going to keep going, especially you, Yanni. I can tell.
Yanni's notorious for that.
I am restraining myself so hard. I
remember last time I was here. It's like,
All right, so Mortal Kombat Legends Cage Match releases October 17th, 2023. In the meantime, Jeremy, where can people find you?
You can either go to spacekicker.com, which is my website, and from there you have all my social links.
Nice.
All right. And I guess now is a good time to say thank you very much, Jeremy. Yes. I will not
be following
up with any further questions. I'm going to throw one in here just to completely shock him. And thank you very much to all of our listeners for stopping by the Realmcast. And again, thank you, Jeremy. Pleasure having you back. It's always a lot of fun to have you on the Realmcast, especially seeing how much I can poke out of you. And we are extremely excited for Cage Match's release.
Thank you. I'm excited too.
Jeremy, before we let you go, what was your favorite finisher from Snowblind?
Oh my gosh.
Or I'm going to add to that question. Have you seen any fatalities from MK1 yet?
No, I haven't seen any fatalities from MK1. And the funny thing about the Snowblind one, it feels so long ago, man. But like the thing that I didn't see that I wish I would have saw, I don't think we saw, was Sento. Like I remember a finisher for Kenshi that was like spinning the blade like a razor blade and cutting through somebody. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, I want to see that. I feel like you can do it better than what the video game guys do because it's so gratuitous.
You should definitely check out Mortal Kombat 1's Kenshi fatalities, and I think you'll be very happy.
I'll be brutal. I'm sure I will.
You're going to love them.
Totally. All right, so everybody, check out Cage Match October 17th, 2023. You can find it on basically wherever you purchase movies. It'll be there. Jeremy, thank you again so much for stopping by. And you can find Yanni, myself, Phantom on the Mortal Kombat group on Facebook, as well as on our pages at Realmcast on social media.
You can also find our official Discord channel on Mortal Kombat Online server through the link in the description, where we discuss Mortal Kombat along with our listeners.
And special thanks to Uppercut Editions for their continued support. The Realmcast is the official podcast of Mortal Kombat Online.
And you can catch up on all episodes of the Realmcast on YouTube, Facebook, iTunes, Spotify, and MortalKombatOnline.com. Thank you.
Wow. Obviously, this is turning us both on. Can you feel that?